Good afternoon. My name is Michael Martin. I'm from the University of Georgia. And today I'm going to be presenting research on the survey of carbon allocation, water status, photosynthesis, and photosynthesis of hibiscus acetosellus Panama red cuttings during adventitious root formation. So plant propagation physiology, a slight deviation from plant physiology. There's numerous aspects of adventitious root formation that we don't entirely understand. And this study was undertaken to help expand and explain those aspects a little bit better. One of the areas is the relationship between adventitious root formation and carbon allocation. Specifically, as new roots, as these adventitious roots are developing, where does this carbon come from? Is it from stored carbohydrates from your stock plant when you took the cutting? Or is it new photosynthates that are rushing in to form these adventitious roots? Secondly, we want to look at how net photosynthetic rates, stomatal conductance, and internal CO2 concentration, how they influence the cuttings, development of roots, and as a whole, its growth and development. And so with a better understanding of these aspects, we have hopefully the development of enhanced propagation guidelines, and further down the road, with all things that we do, it hopefully translates into money. If we can propagate plants better, we can save money, we can do things better. So the objectives were to determine relative importance of pre- and post-severance photosynthates for adventitious root development or root formation, and determine if there's correlations that exist among cutting water potential and gas exchange parameters. And those gas exchange parameters I just mentioned, net photosynthesis, internal CO2, and stomatal conductance. So our materials were hibiscus acetosellus Panama red. We used an elemental analysis isotope ratio mass spectrometer to do our C13 counts, which I'll get to here briefly. We used thermocouple psychrometers and then a photosynthesis measurement system, which was a Licor 6400. I'm going to break the experiment up into the two parts and then bring it back together at the end and explain a little more in detail. So for the methods, we had stock plants of hibiscus Panama red. They were labeled as they were growing with the theory that as the plants were growing, this new growth, we would label it with carbon 13, and the carbon 13 would be laid down in this plant material. We did some preliminary work and discovered that, yes, this in fact is a viable method of depositing carbon 13 in a plant stem, and we undertook this. So we had stock plants that were labeled with the cuttings from them will be referred to as stock plant labeled cuttings. And then we had unlabeled stock plants, just the plants that were growing off by themselves, no carbon 13 exposure. So we had untreated cuttings that were taken from them. So once the cuttings were taken, they sit, and this is what we call our control or our natural abundance. And every once in a while, you'll hear me refer to it as natural abundance. Natural abundance is the natural amount of carbon 13 that occurs in a plant. Some plants are better at discriminating against carbon 13, some could care less. So that's why it's natural abundant. It is the natural rate. And then we had cuttings that were treated with carbon 13 CO2. And this was to allow us to see if, as new cuttings, if they were bringing in carbon 13 and using that to deposit in the roots to form those roots effectively. And these are called our post-severance labeled cuttings. So for our cutting water potential, we used leaf discs that were collected from the most recent fully expanded leaf. They were blotted dry because these plants were under mist, as typical commercial cuttings were. And we did interveinal leaf tissue punches. So that's where our leaf disc came from, was the interveinal tissue. For the cutting gas exchange, again, these were undertaken under the most fully expanded leaf. And the data was collected every 3 days, starting on day zero and going to day 21. And so there were eight harvest days for the data and the cuttings themselves. And I want to emphasize this to y'all. All measurements took place simultaneously. So it was made for very long days. We started about 7 o'clock in the morning and finished at 7 at night. The water potential was collected while the gas exchange machine was running, while we were doing carbon 13 treatments or collecting that plant material. So all of this data is coming in at one time every 3 days. So we're going to move into our results for our carbon 13. So we have time, and we see time in days, and then carbon-13 concentration on the y-axis. Roots didn't appear in the cuttings until day 9. And then I want to point out that the arrows, the down arrows, those are the days that the cuttings received carbon-13 treatments. We did multiple small treatments so that we could help follow where the carbon-13 was moving through the plant. The open circles are our stock plants, our stock labeled plants. And again, these were the cuttings that came from stock plants that were labeled with carbon-13. And we see that there's a slight decline. But more importantly, carbon-13 was present in those roots as soon as they started forming. So this shows that there were carbohydrates being pulled in from stores in the cutting prior to it being taken. But moving on, when we look at the triangles, the downward pointing triangles, these are our post-severance labeled cuttings. So again, these are cuttings that are treated as cuttings with C13. We see that there's a huge increase after each treatment. So this shows that there's an influx of new carbon coming in from this cutting. But we also, again, going back to the pre-severance or the stock plant treated plants, we see that that carbon is slowly being diluted with more carbon coming in. So we have a twofold effect here. We have a little bit of carbon coming from pre-existing stores, and we also have carbon coming in via new photosynthesis, new photosynthates. And so from a result of this, the carbon 13C concentrations in rootstocks, they decreased from day 9 to day 21. And again, we believe this was likely due to dilution. The root dry weight was increasing the whole time. But on these plants, there was no new carbon 13 treatment. So the carbon 13 that was there, that was it for these plants. So you see this natural dilution. There's elevated 13C in the rootstocks of the stock plant labeled cuttings. And again, this is due to the movement of carbohydrates produced post-severance. We see an increase in the carbon-13 concentrations in the roots of post-severance labeled cuttings. And this is new photosynthates that we're seeing moved in, as I showed in that graph. We have that fairly rapid increase in carbon-13. Again, the only place that carbon-13 can come from is new photosynthates. And to hit on a high point, both pre- and post-severance produced photosynthates contribute to root growth. If stored carbohydrates didn't contribute to the root growth, we wouldn't have seen any carbon-13 in that initial treatment. So by it being present, we make the assumption that, yes, there are stored carbohydrates being pulled from this cutting. And that goes back to everything we learned in basic propagation, that healthy stock plants lead to healthy cuttings. If the cuttings have a healthy carbohydrate store, they have a good place to start their root formation. When we move on to our water potential, this to me was the most intriguing thing because we're constantly fed that water potential is why cuttings take so long to root, why they kind of flounder initially, but there was no difference in any of our water potential measurements. As a matter of fact, and I'm not allowed to really present this data because we didn't have them under the same conditions, I maintained the stock plants on the bench next to our cutting bench. There was no significant difference between the water potential of our stock plants or our cuttings that were under mist. So where does that leave us? When we look at our net photosynthetic rates, and again, this is over time, PN is net photosynthetic rate over time, we see that there's a strong sigmoidal curve where we have low photosynthesis to begin with, but if you look at day 9, you see that photosynthetic rate begins to tick up fairly quickly. Again, this is with stomatal conductance. And if we look at day 9, right about here, it's a little slow to pick up. But again, we have what we consider to be a sigmoidal curve of it starting off fairly low and then gradually increasing over time. Here's the one that intrigues us the most, the internal CO2 concentration. You would expect if the plant is actively photosynthesizing that you would see some variation. And while there is a minute amount of variation in this, there's not a large deviation in this CO2 concentration. We're still working on this, and I'll get to a bit better explanation here in a minute. But there were no significant changes in water potential. So the cutting wasn't water stressed. We saw a net photosynthetic rate increase in a sigmoidal pattern. We saw the same thing. A sigmoidal stomatal conductance showed the same type of sigmoidal increase. And internal CO2 increased, being only slightly higher on day 18 and 21 than day 0 through 15. This is what really hurts my heart. This was part of my dissertation work. There was no correlation between gas exchange parameters and water potential parameter. I worked so hard collecting all this data and found nothing that what I was looking for. Except with the low stomatal conductance. The first 12 days, there was no drought stress. If it was drought stressed, the stomatas would be closed. But we saw no signs of drought stress in those cuttings based on the water potential data. We had relatively high internal CO2 concentrations with low net photosynthetic rates during the first 15 days. And we keep coming back to this question. This was an unintended part of this experiment, was why? Why is it so high with such low photosynthetic rates? And this leads us to the conclusion that internal CO2 concentrations were not limiting the net photosynthetic rates. And it suggests that there's something else non-stomatal. So we have our cuttings on the bench. If they're drought stressed, the stomata close. There's a low photosynthetic rate, but that's clearly not the case. There's something else going on here. And so this leads us to think that there's a source-sink imbalance, and we really want to look at this more. But what we have found is that the root growth rate and photosynthetic rate, there's a decent correlation between the two. So as a summary of the entire project, the source of carbon-13 for newly growing roots is both sources, existing carbohydrates from the stock plant as well as new photosynthates. The low gas exchange rates following the removal of the stock plant. So after the visible roots appear, net photosynthetic rate and stomatal rates, or stomatal conductance, both increased at day 9, or starting at day 9. And the low net photosynthetic rate prior to root appearance, it's not associated with internal CO2. It's not correlated with root growth rate, it is correlated with root growth rate, and it leads us to believe that there is a sink source limitation somewhere in the plant. And we have to think about this. What is the greatest source of carbohydrates produced? Or one of the largest, at least, it's the roots. When you take a cutting, there are no roots. And so we're hypothesizing that the plant or the cutting, it photosynthesizes, and it reaches this magic point where it can't do anything else with those new photosynthates, and it just stops. And as soon as the roots begin to form, we see everything begin to pick back up. That's all. If there are any questions. Yes, Ryan. So we actually did two other species, Podocarpus and then Monarda petite pink, I believe, and saw very similar results. The carbohydrate sources were exactly identical. The Podocarpus, as you probably well know, is very slow, laggy to root, especially in the wintertime. The hibiscus and the Monarda rooted in about 9 days. The Podocarpus took almost 45. And it's just, you saw that just drawn out much further. And the water potential rates were the same, almost flat. So this kind of leads us, we're still forming this, but we really believe that there is a source sink issue that we're starting to see rather than water potential or anything along those lines.